Thanks to the organizers for inviting me to come out. I should say that this work is a little bit rough and ready, and that a lot of the more solid stuff grew out of some work that I was doing a couple of years ago. And then when I realized I would be coming here, I thought, oh well, I should do some things that aren't 2 years old. In the past few weeks, even I've made some progress, I think. That was just a disclaimer. Let me just begin. Something that I'm interested in when reasoning about, say, definite or indefinite causal structures is to adopt an approach which I like to call black box causal reasoning. This idea is that I'm given some kind of process. Maybe I don't even know if this is a classical or a quantum process, but just some kind of black box with some inputs and some outputs roughly the idea, for instance, that this input and output pair maybe belongs to an agent called A, B, C, D, E. And I want to try to ask, can we really say anything about causal relationships between these systems? Okay, so just looking at this box from the outside, can we try to model, observe, or prove anything about the causal relationships of these systems? Okay, so I'm interested in this kind of picture, but also in the dual picture, where I don't have a kind of shared process, which is like a resource being shared by my agents, but maybe the thing that's in the black box is the environment that they live in. And maybe there is some definite or indefinite wiring between these, which we now think of as our local labs, which are in some kind of causal order. Okay, so that's the kind of goal. The setting where a lot of this work is situated is in something called process theories. Okay, so what is a process theory? It just consists of some types. Okay, so you can think of those as like Hilbert spaces or dimensions, or maybe just sets of classical variables, and some processes. And some processes which I just write as boxes, okay? So these have some inputs labeled by some types and some outputs also labeled by some types. I have a symbol like tensor, which means just form the joint system or the joint type of those types. And a trivial type, which I write as I. You can think of this, for instance, in the quantum case as the one-dimensional space. So states are processes from the trivial system to a system, and effects are the opposite of it. So I can think of this as the process which prepares a state. Okay, so a process theory consists of these things and some operations for composing those things, so for plugging boxes together, so composition, both in sequence and in parallel. I don't really think that these things need to embed in some kind of geometry so I can freely cross wires over each other. Identity processes and identity on the trivial type is just some blank space. And some rules about how these things, so these are some algebraic operations, so you need some rules about how they interact with each other. So for the enthusiasts, that's the axioms of a symmetric monoidal category. But these rules just do what you think that they should do. And the idea is that only connectivity matters. So I draw some diagram which depicts some boxes and how the boxes are plugged together. And all of these rules do is ensure that it didn't really matter how topologically I situated these things. The important thing is which boxes I plugged into which. Okay, so those are the first four ingredients, which you could say a process theory is really just a symmetric monoidal category. The one more thing, which really gives you some mileage to start to talk about causal relationships, is that for every system, there's a special effect, so there's a special process from that system to nothing. which is called discarding. Okay, so in the classical case, discarding is like marginalizing a classical variable. In the quantum case, discarding is like tracing out. Okay. So this enables us to state the causality postulate. Okay, so maybe this is an unfortunate name because causal is already very overloaded. But having this discarding enables us to say when a process is causal, and it's just that it satisfies this equation. Okay, and the intuition behind this equation is that if the outputs of a process are not getting used, it doesn't matter which process happens. Okay, so if I'm not going to use the system that phi made, I could have done some other phi prime and it wouldn't have affected what's happening kind of in a non-local way. Right, so as a consequence, a causal process only affects processes which consume its output. So actually choosing a particular process as opposed to another one only affects things kind of in the causal future of this diagram. So the things that are plugged in later to that process. Okay, so this term causality comes from OPTs and the kind of Pavia approach, of which one representative is here. And this is just a very kind of abstract way of writing it down. Okay, so in the classical case, the relevant process theory to consider here is the process theory where objects are natural numbers. Okay, so I just think of that as a system is just some natural number. And that number is just how many possible different values that system could take, okay? So a bit would be like a two-dimensional system, and, you know, if I had five possible values, it would be a five. The objects are natural numbers, and that's category theory language there. The morphisms, or the processes, are matrices of positive numbers. Okay, so you can think of these just as conditional probability distributions. And then, what does causality mean? Well, discarding, we define to be just a row vector of all ones. So discarding a state gives me one, which is like discarding the trivial system. And that just says that a state is a column vector, which is normalized, so a probability distribution. So the causal states are probability distributions. The causal processes are the matrices where each of the columns sum up to one, so these are just stochastic maps or conditional probabilities. The quantum case, we have this process theory called CPM, whose objects or whose types are Hilbert spaces, and the morphisms are completely positive maps. So there, discarding is the trace, and causality for states means having trace one, and causality for processes, generic processes, is that this completely positive map be trace preserving. Okay, so you should think of causality as just being normalized in the suitably right sense. Okay, so having this special discarding process around lets you say more than just be normalized. It also can tell you about signaling relationships of these boxes. Okay, so for instance, if I have now two sort of areas, you could say A and B, and I want to specify the fact that B cannot send a signal to A, I just say discarding the output of B disconnects in this kind of way, right? So just using this kind of compositional language, I can very easily say what it means to be one-way signaling. So I could have also said one-way non-signaling, I just mean signaling is only allowed in one direction. And then, of course, just having this on both sides, I can say what non-signaling means. Right? Okay, so this workshop is about the switch, which is a thing which takes in two causal processes, for instance, takes in two channels, and produces another one. So actually this is a higher order thing, right? So something that takes processes to processes. So there's a lot of different ways in which something could be higher order, right? So for instance, a two comb is something which sort of takes a process in here, something from A to A prime, and puts a process out here. We could have three combs or n combs, right? So these are all different kinds of higher order processes. Process matrices are also a different kind of thing, right? They take a causal process on the left and a causal process on the right, and they give me one, right? So the normalized things give me one, the subnormalized things give me probabilities. Okay, so there's a lot of different kinds of ways that you might want to constrain these higher order processes. And it starts to look a bit like a zoo, right? So if I take a two comb and I put it with a process matrix, what is the thing that comes out, right? Do these things plug together? How do they interact with each other? Right? So first I'll say a little bit about how you can represent these higher order things. So I grew up in Oxford, I could say. So a way that I like to talk about higher order processes is using compact closed categories. Okay, so what is that? So that's a process theory, and also just some abstract version of the Choi-Yamakovsky isomorphism. Okay, so what is abstract Choi-Yamakovsky? That just means that for every system A, I have another system called A dual, and two processes. I have a cup and a cap, and you can think of this maybe just A dual could be A, and this is just the Bell state, and this is just the adjoint of it. And then these two processes have to satisfy these, which are called the Yanking equations. Right? So the utility of this, once you have this kind of structure around, I have a kind of map state duality always. So I get an isomorphism between the processes which go from A to B to the states of A dual tensor B. Okay, so this effectively says that my process theory has a way of turning a channel or a process into, say, a Choi matrix, so a state, right? So it gives you a version of this process state duality. Right, so for instance, in the classical case, if I have a stochastic map, I can just write all of its probabilities in a big list, right? Now I have a probability distribution. I can think about now stochastic maps, which would act on stochastic maps. Right, so how does this let you define higher order processes? Well, now that I know that things in here are basically the same as processes from A to B, let's just make a little notation, right? So A, this thing is called the lollipop. So A lollipop B, I'll just define to be this. And now a process which goes from a process to a process is just something which takes in this joint system and produces that joint system. Okay, so now my process theory has a way of dealing with these higher order things. Okay, and I can write it as a box like this where the state would kind of go in here, or I can write it in this kind of comb like notation. Okay, but there's a bit of a problem with working just with compact closed categories. I mean, the benefit of compact closed is that everything collapses to first order. The disbenefit about compact closed is everything collapses to first order. Right? So there's no kind of higher order structure there. So I was saying that we had combs and process matrices, and these are all different kinds of things, but a compact category can't tell the difference. Okay, and you could say that the reason that it happens is if I take the tensor product of two things and I take its dual, well, that's just the tensor product of the duals of each of the individual things. Okay, so, and if you think about just taking the dual space of a Hilbert space, that's true, right? So it commutes with tensor product in this kind of way. And then if I think of what that implies, well, suppose I have a higher order thing, right? So this takes a process as an input and produces me an output. Well, if I just unroll my definition of my lollipop like this, and I get something like that. I can push that star inside, and I just get something like this. And then I juggle it around a bit, and now I just use that definition again, and I see that it's a first order thing, right? So the only thing that was actually remembered here was what has a dual on it and what doesn't, right? It doesn't really remember that this should have been a process coming in and a state coming out, right? It just remembers I had an input called B and outputs called A and C. Okay, so we can fix that by generalizing a bit. And the generalization are these things called star autonomous categories, right? I'm not gonna write the definition, it's not bad, but the important thing is that actually this isomorphism fails. Okay, so if this were a compact category, I could push that star inside. Both of these become double dual, which is just the system itself, and then this isomorphism would hold. Well, here, a thing that fails is actually a good thing, because we can see that by taking this kind of De Morgan dual of the tensor product, I get a new way of combining my systems. Okay, so this thing is a new inequivalent way of combining two systems, which in this setting is called par, and it's written as a upside down ampersand just to make it difficult to write. in a star autonomous category, we always have two different ways of combining systems. And actually, so something that's very nice is in the right kind of star autonomous category, these things make a lot of sense in that this becomes a non-signaling way of combining stuff, and this becomes a signaling way of combining stuff. Okay, and that, yes?
So is the dual of a dual still a dual there? Is A star star still A?
Yeah, so the a star autonomous category has basically two properties. A star star is the same as A. And also, A star par B still sort of behaves like a space of functions in the right kind of way. Okay, but anyway. Yeah, so double duals are still take you back to where you started. So I'll just give you a little idea about the recipe for, so this is a very general abstract thing that computer scientists were talking about since the 80s at least, I think actually the 70s. Now I'll give you a kind of recipe for getting a star autonomous category, which really lets you say things about causality. Okay, so the idea is I'm gonna take a raw materials category. So these are categories of unnormalized stuff. Okay, so matrices of positive numbers or just CP maps with no trace conditions. And form a star autonomous category which captures this logic of causality. So where these tensor and par really make sense as causal things. Okay, so if I take positive matrices, I get higher order stochastic maps. And if I take completely positive maps, I get higher order quantum channels. And something I'd like to do, but I haven't found a great example yet, is to take some sort of non-standard model and be able to look at causality there. So for instance, in computer science, people are really interested in causality for concurrent systems. And I think maybe such a construction could give you something reasonable there. Okay, so I'll give you a rough idea of how this is done. So first you could think about what it means to be causal. For instance, what it means to be, say, trace preserving. Well, on the one hand, it is just if I trace the output, it's the same as tracing the input. The other thing to say is it preserves the normalized states. Right? So a process is causal if and only if it preserves the set of causal states, right? So a CPTP preserves density matrices. A stochastic map preserves probability distributions, okay? That is, it always preserves this set. So the set of states, so states are things from the trivial system to a system that are normalized, okay? So it preserves some subset of all the states. So we'll generalize this by just saying that my types are no longer just a type. They're no longer just a dimension. They're both a dimension and the set of things which I'm calling normalized. Okay, at the first order, this is like the density matrices. At the second order, this will be the channels, right? And that's a different set from the normalized states on the joint system.
Sorry, quick question.
Yeah.
So do you assume that you can all, that this is still true when you apply to part of a larger system? So do that, like you have, are you assuming complete positivity?
Yeah, so the way this is done, complete positivity is sort of built in because your raw materials category still already has this completeness, so you take completely positive maps.
So in this case, it means that this is causal also, not just when you apply it on raw, but also when you apply it to a larger raw.
Yeah, but for normalization, it's automatic, so it follows from that. Well, not completely automatic. Your basic category has to satisfy something. We call it enough causal states. So basically, the causal states are separating for processes, which is a bit like local tomography or something. So if you don't have that, then yeah, you probably want to declare some kind of completely causality preserving or something. Yeah?
Did I understand your last statement correctly, that through this isomorphism, a normalized state on A dual tensor B doesn't correspond to a process that's trace preserving? There's an extra constraint that I need, like the trace on B will give me identity on the dual of A. And so am I right?
Yeah.
That's the extra condition that you want to stipulate as part of the
type? Yeah, that's right. So the set of trace preserving things is a subset of the normalized state. Well, I mean, you know, after some, you do some rescaling or something, but it's kind of a smaller category. It's like both that it needs to be normalized and needs to have this thing, like you said, I trace the output and it makes the identity on the other side. So the idea is that the types should kind of carry these extra constraints around as you work with these things. So to make this construction, The first thing to notice is that if I have any set of states, that should have been ST of A anyway, any set of states admits a dual, which is the set of effects which are normalized for that set of states. Okay, so I have C, which is some set of things I'm calling normalized, and C star is the set of effects such that if I plug those things together, I get one. Okay, and then if I dual again, I get a set of states again, which in general could be bigger than the set I started with. But we say that it's closed if it's equal to its double dual. Okay, so this thing always gives a closure type operation. If I do it twice, it's the same as doing it once. So being closed is being equal to this double dual. And then this cause C is a new process theory built out of C. So remember, C can be like the classical or the quantum case, where the types are pairs of a system, so that's like the dimension of my space, and a set of things that I'm calling normalized. And then the processes are just the things between those two systems which preserve that set. Okay. Then this thing has a star, which it inherits kind of from C, which is the process theory downstairs. I just take the dual of the system and also the dual of the set of states, right? And then I get a dual of that object. And it also has a tensor, which is I take the tensor from C. So this would be like the tensor of Hilbert spaces or just the product of natural numbers. And here I take all of the product states and then I just take the double dual. Okay. And that gives me a tensor product. And actually this stuff together makes a star autonomous category, right? So questions, other questions about that?
No. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
The double dual you said earlier in the star autonomous category just gives you back the original object, but that's not the case here for these product states, that you don't get back to the original necessarily?
Right, so the double dual is always a closure operation for a set of states. So if I have an arbitrary set of states, I can take its double dual and now it's closed.
Okay.
The set of product states is not closed. So if I take the set of product states and I close it like this, then I do get a closed thing. If you look at what this is in the quantum case, it's taking the affine closure of product states and then restricting to the positive ones. So actually I get all of the joint states at first order. For processes, this is different.
So had you not taken the double dual, you'd get something that wasn't closed. So the double dual closes it off.
Maybe. Yeah, that's right.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can think of these things as sort of spanning the whole space, and then this closes it, so it really gives me an affine closed space of states to work with. Okay, so because this thing is star autonomous now and not just compact closed, it gives us more than one way to combine systems. So I'm using this term connectives because of the connection to logic, right? So in logic, we have connectives like and, or, implies. And here, we have connectives tensor, par, and lollipop. And they're related to each other in exactly the same way that and, or, and implies are related to each other. Right, so here I have A and B. And here, A or B is the De Morgan dual of A and B, right? So not A and not B, not all of that is A or B. And implies is not A or B, right? So you can see that these things are related to each other in a way that starts to look like logic. And you can start to work with these things like you would with logical formulae. And now the difference in these two things is that tensor is the smallest joint state space that contains all the product states. And this par, which is the De Morgan dual of it, is the biggest joint state space, which is normalized on all product effects. Okay? So somehow there's this duality going on. The tensor is always the smallest thing that makes sense, and par is the biggest thing that makes sense for a given system. And this lollipop always gives me a space of causal state preserving maps. Okay, so that gives me a way of forming state spaces of processes. Okay, so for first order systems, these are systems of the form this, right? So I take just my underlying system and I take the dual of discarding. So basically all of the trace one things, right? So that gives me a first order system. I have my system and I just take all the density matrices, what have you. Now if I look at the set of normalized states on the tensor product, well this is just the dual of tracing each of those systems, right? This is the only product state in the dual of this A. And that's just all the causal states, all the normalized states. Whereas if I look at the par, A par B, well, this is the thing that's normalized on all the things which are in the dual of A and the dual of B, which is also just the trace. So that's all the causal states, okay? So this is why, you know, when you learn quantum theory, which normally just talks about systems, you never heard that there were two different tensor products, right? Because if you're talking about states, there's only one tensor product, because these two things coincide for state spaces. So for first order systems, these two things are the same. But of course, I wouldn't have gone to this work if they were just always the same.
Sorry, can I?
Yeah.
What's the first mean in first order again?
First order here just means like states. So a first order system, sometimes you get off by one here, but a first order system is like a state space. A second order system is a space of processes, so a space of maps from states to states. Third order would be maps from processes to processes. Fourth order would be maps on those things,
okay,
and so on.
So that's the order.
That's the order. So I'm using order in the sense of kind of a in a computer science sense.
To maps,
yeah.
Of processes to maps of maps of.
Exactly. Yeah. So how many times you want to kind of iterate this kind of maps of maps thing? Right. So when does tensor not equal par? Well, let me take some first order systems here, and let me form the par of them. Okay. Now we can use the logic, the little bit of logic that I showed you, to figure out what this should be. Okay. So here's processes from A to A prime, processes from B to B prime. I take their par. Well, I'll use this equation. So not A or B is the same as A implies B, right? This is how I form spaces of processes. So here I just unrolled it for there and there, and I get a par of four things, which then I can reshuffle. And then if I pull this star out of these two terms, the tensor and the par are De Morgan duals of each other, so these two become tensors. And then since these two are first order, tensor and par are the same thing. I can make that a tensor. And I see that this is just maps from A tensor B to A prime tensor B prime. Okay, so taking the par of these two spaces actually gives me all of the processes. Okay, so I get all of the things which are shaped like this. Which just satisfy causality. So if I discard all of the outputs, that's the same as discarding all the inputs. Okay, so you could say that these things don't have any kind of signaling constraints. But if I take the tensor, I get all of the non-signaling processes of this shape. Okay, so that's that holds in the classical and the quantum case. It also holds more generally if your C satisfies some kind of having a nice discarding operation. Okay, so that's why I claim the tensor and the par are kind of like a signaling and a non-signaling way of combining systems.
Alex, are these really the product processes? Is there signaling in both directions? Like there's...
Yeah. So these things are non-signaling in both directions. But they don't need to be product processes, and they don't need to be localizable either. So they don't need to be a kind of having a shared state going to two kind of local things. So for instance, the PR box would live here even in classical theory, because that's a non-signaling stochastic process from two inputs to two outputs.
So when you say non-signaling, you mean A can't signal to B prime and B can't signal to A prime, or is just one enough?
It means both.
Both.
This is a symmetric condition. Okay. I think fairly soon talk about the asymmetric one where you only put the constraint in one direction. So in these categories, it's always the case that on the trivial system is the same as its dual. And then if you read some papers from the 70s, you'll see that in fact, for star autonomous categories, this always implies that the tensor embeds into the par. Okay, so this thing is always the little thing, and that's always the big thing. So you can ask if something lies in between, right? And in general, there should be a lot of things which lie in between here. So an example is, like, as you mentioned, the one-way signaling processes. So the processes, say, of this kind of shape. Where now A can signal to B prime, but B cannot signal to A prime. And those processes have exactly this type, And if you're used to working with combs or something, for instance, this is just the type of a two comb, right? So here, I've written it in a slightly different order, but it takes a state and it takes a process from A prime to B, and it gives me a state of B prime, right? I could also sort of reorganize those and say that it takes a, I think a process from A to B, and it gives me a process from A prime to B prime. Right, and that maybe looks more familiar as the type of a two comb, but it's the same as this one. Okay, and then you can make more examples, right? So an in-party non-signaling thing is just iterating the tensor product. Quantum in combs is just iterating this kind of taking processes of so a map from a two comb to a process is a three comb and so on. So iterating this makes in combs. Indefinite causal structures live in this bigger space, which is in the dual of the non-signaling things, right? So for instance, this the OCB process, the quantum switch, all these kinds of things live in this type in the process theory of causal CPM. So this is like the quantum one. And if you look at these classical indefinite causal structures, so I think Ognjen mentioned this indefinite causal structure of Baumler and Wolf, which is purely a classical thing. So the way that they formalized it was as a process matrix, which was diagonal in all of its inputs and outputs. But it's also just something of this type, which lives in this totally classical process theory of higher order stochastic maps. So somehow it was a bit of a hack to make everything a process matrix, because it's a fully classical thing. Okay, so that's kind of the types of causal structures you can express in this language. Okay, and that's more or less where things were, as I said, a couple of years ago. We had a nice type theory of these things, and we're wondering about good things to do with it, right? So we kind of have a hammer in need of a nail, right? So this thing should tell us something kind of insightful about these processes. Okay, and I think where it does come in handy is that type systems, well, in computer science, type systems really tell you what thing plugs into what thing, right? So if I write a function which expects strings and I put in a number, it's going to complain that I gave it the wrong thing, right? So a number doesn't plug into that function. It's the same with types. Okay, so this should tell us something about composition. All right, so for first order processes, so for things from states to states, the story about composition is very simple, right? We have well-defined operations of putting things in sequence and putting things in parallel, and these pretty much suffice to build anything, right? So once I have these operations, I can build arbitrary compositions of first order things. But for higher order processes, things are not so simple. Right, so here's a couple of examples of ways things are not simple. If I take a thing, where thing could mean three comb or process matrix or anything like that. If I take thing tensor thing, this is typically not a thing again. Right, so taking a tensor of two process matrices is not a process matrix, at least not in the sense that maybe you mean when you say that. And there's also many ways to plug things together in these higher order processes. And some are well defined in the sense that they'll be normalized, and some are not, right? And it's kind of a complicated story to figure out which plugins are legal and which are illegal. Okay, so I'll just look at the tensor product of two process matrices as an example. Okay, so the tensor product of two process matrices is not what we expect it to be, or at least not what we would like it to be. Okay. So in fact, it was shown fairly recently by Guérin from Bedroni and Bruckner that there is no kind of reasonable bilinear map which acts like a tensor product for process matrices. in the sense that it behaves the right way on definite causal structures and satisfies a couple of other things, right? So somehow this is even too much to expect, right? That we have a notion of parallel composition which sends thing tensor thing to thing, right? So we should really figure out instead what thing tensor thing it is. Okay. Keep thinking thing one and thing two here in this picture. Okay, so let's have a look actually at the type of this thing and see if it will tell us something useful. Okay, so here I have two process matrices. The types are non-signaling dual, tensor, non-signaling dual. Okay, so here I have two parties, A and B, and here I have two different parties, A prime and B prime.
I think it's 10 minutes from
it. 10 minutes, great. Okay, so when I take their tensor product, I get this type. And now what sort of process does this type expect to be plugged into it, right? So process matrices expect to have a non-signaling map plugged into them. That's exactly the things they're normalized for. Now this, if I take this dual and I pull it to the outside, oops, let me tell you what it's not first, right? So what it's not is something which expects a joint process on AA prime on this side and a joint process on BB prime on that side. Combined in a non-signaling way, it is not the dual of that space, okay? In fact, this type is way too small. This only includes, for instance, definite causal orders where both of those process matrices are kind of pointing in the same direction, right? So this type is way too small for what that should be. But actually, it's not this type either. Okay, this type is way too big. So this is the thing which expects a non-signaling product on A, B, A prime, and B prime. Okay, so this is like plugging in four different boxes into each of those sites. Okay? And these are way too wild, right? So I know almost nothing about such a system. Right? These things could be connected to each other in arbitrary, definite, or indefinite causal orders. Whereas here I know something about this, right? I know it's the tensor product of two cones. Right? So can I capture exactly how much I know about that? And I actually can, because if I take this dual and I pull it to the outside, well, as I said, the tensor and the par are De Morgan duals of each other. So I get the dual of this type. Okay, so how do I read this? I read this as the processes that I get in have a non-signaling sector of A and B, right? So the A and the B can't talk to each other. I have a non-signaling sector of A prime and B prime. But then these two sectors are combined with each other in a kind of signaling way. Okay, so this half of the process can talk to that half of the process. And in fact, the direction of signaling can be either. Okay, so let me look at this thing that can get plugged in, right? So this is the type of processes which can go into a pair of process matrices like this. Okay, well, examples of things that live in here are combs, or one-way signaling things, where the signaling goes in the same direction, right? So that's what this type is. Okay, here the signaling goes from A to A prime, and the signaling goes from B to B prime, and I can combine those, and you can prove in the type theory that embeds in there. And also in the opposite direction, so here the primes go to the not primed things, and as long as the signaling goes in the same direction, this lives in there. Right, so the only place you get contradictions is when the signaling goes in opposite directions. Then you can use this to build a time loop, and that's what breaks the normalization of this thing. Okay, so this type really gives you some fine-grained information about what a pair of process matrices expects. Okay, so you can go away and you can actually prove that this is true, and it's not too bad. But the thing I've been thinking about lately is can we come up with a fairly nice formula for figuring out what kinds of plugins are allowed? And there actually is one. Okay, so if I have a type of a system, I can take the type as my input, and I can sort of pull these wires apart, my tensor and my par. And when I pull apart a tensor, I'll put a little thing here which says that these are non-signaling in their relationship to each other, and I won't put such a thing there. And then I can recompose it with the opposite markings, but I put the non-signaling thing now on the par side, because somehow this is the dual thing. And then I check if there's no signaling loops in the diagram that I get. Okay? So I can show you what one of these things looks like. Okay, so this is the type of a non-signaling process. And I pull it apart, like so. And then I put it back together, like so. And now I need to check if that has any signaling loops. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, I don't want this shape occurring, either locally or non-locally. So the way that I can check for that shape is I take this graph and I apply these rules. All right, so here, if I have a pair of parallel things, as long as one of them is non-signaling, I can contract it to just a single thing. And here, if I have a line, I can contract it to a point. And now it turns out, if I can contract to a point, this is a valid composition. And if I can't, well, yeah, then it's possibly invalid. But if I can contract to a point, this is a valid composition.
What do you mean possibly invalid? Is it not invalid for sure? If you can't.
So this is a sound condition for checking if two things plug in. I don't actually know if it's complete. I think so. It's let's see. Sufficient, but maybe not necessary. Right, but so why does this work? Why does this graph trick actually work? And the reason is because this was actually known for a long time. So these dot decompositions are these things called proof nets, which is the way that you can do proofs in this logic with tensor and par, which is sometimes called multiplicative linear logic. And these contraction conditions are actually just this famous NF theorem where these are equivalent to the Danos-Renier conditions for correctness of proof nets. Okay, so somehow this thing that these guys came up with in the 70s, not thinking about causality at all, tells you when causal processes can plug into each other, which I think is pretty cool. So yeah, as I said, this is sound or sufficient. I don't know about necessity yet. But let's see. Maybe I'll just very quickly show you what such a contraction looks like. So I thought to rather than do this by hand, to just very quickly kind of knock up a little linear logic theorem prover over a weekend. Okay, and for instance, so here's two types. So this is non-signaling, okay, from A to B. And this is one-way signaling from A to B. And it should be the case that this one implies that one. Okay, so we can draw its contraction graph. It looks something like this. Okay, and now we want to see if this thing indeed contracts. So here it is after one contraction, two, three, four, five, six, and yes, indeed contracts to a point. Right? So that constitutes a proof that non-signaling is more specific than signaling, right? So a non-signaling process will plug into something that wants a comb, for instance. Maybe let me just show you a big one, and then I'll conclude. So this one is the proof that if you have two one-way signaling things going the same direction, that this will plug into the tensor product of two combs. Thinks for a while. And we indeed have a proof. Okay, so you see why I wrote my own sort of theorem prover for this, because I didn't want to do that by hand. But this proof now works for all dimensions, and actually it works in any of these process theories. So classical and quantum, and maybe a kind of GPT generalization of these things. So I guess that's where I want to conclude. So you can play with this thing if you like. Here's the only paper by me yet, and here's some other things that I referred to along the way. So thank you.
Time, so let's take a question or two. Is it okay if
Sure.
So, how does this relate to the classification of Perinotti? Explore that.
Yeah, it's the same, actually. So if you look at the hierarchy that he defines, and he gives these arrow and the tensor as these kind of connectives and has a logic for this. That's exactly the same as the lollipop and the tensor here. So in a sense, he gives better classification conditions because you get these kind of collections of affine constraints, and then you can decide exactly sort of, you have necessary and sufficient conditions for things to embed into each other. This sort of under-approximates those in that you have sufficient conditions, but I don't know the whole story about necessity yet. And you probably need to sort of import some more things about your specific theory. Maybe. I'm not sure. So.
So you said your formalism worked for arbitrary, you know, GPT. Do you expect something different to work?
Well, so it doesn't.
Works.
Yeah, I heard it doesn't work for arbitrary GPTs. So something that I missed out is that your C needs to have a well-behaved discarding operation, and what well-behaved means here is essentially that the property that if I have a two-comb, that this always factors as a sort of process before and a process after, so like a circuit with holes. Okay, so that's true for classical theory and quantum theory, actually for completely different reasons. And maybe it's true for other GPTs, but I don't know. I don't know if, for instance, Boxworld or something would have a property like that. So.
Okay, we better stop there. It's time to get